You're listening to Ride Time Radio.
Yep, we're on Ride Time Radio and we are in the Business Lounge. Now, tonight is going to be a very interesting debate indeed, right? Because we are going to be talking to our resident guests, Andy and Steve. And we've been heating up for this debate this week, right? Because there's been so many different things going on in so many different countries, right? We've had parliaments in several countries changing rules, pushing rules through. We've got distraction politics going on. We've got all sorts of things happening at the same time. And I'm going to do no more than get us straight into this week's Business Lounge. Steve and Andy, guys, how are you doing both? You good?
Yeah, all good. All good here. Been a very busy week.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andy, we'll start with you, being you was the first one jumping in, and Steve was still sipping coffee or wine, I'm not sure. I've got my eye on him this week, right? I've got my eye on him. Andy, give us a rundown on business this week in Tenerife. How's things looking for you?
It is so busy. And I sympathise with the people that actually live in town. Not that there's many live in the town anymore, resident-wise, because obviously it's all tourists, but the island is full. We are probably the number one destination for Cheltenham watchers.
Yeah.
Honest. Every insane. Pub, everywhere, everyone that I deal with is packed from 10 o'clock onwards. I mean, they are.
I'll tell you what, I was talking to one of the bookies yesterday, right? And there was a guy who walked into the pub, put $4,000 down on a bookie, right?
And won, right?
Took two clap back off him, right? Went down the road to the next bookie in the next pub the next day, put another $4,000 on, right? And took him as well.
Sweet. I like that.
They're losing big down there at the moment, you know, and you know, they're used to them like 10 and 20 euro little bets and stuff going on. Four grand and they took it and they lost.
I'm surprised they would have
laid that off. Don't worry.
I would have thought so. Yeah. It's a big bet that. And it's
somebody knows what they're doing this week. Well,
exactly.
Well, which makes a change, doesn't it? Somebody knows what they're doing this week. Steve, how's business been for you, my friend?
Oh, a bit like Andy in lots of ways, my friend. I mean, I have been nonstop all week, just nonstop. I can't tell you. It's just we haven't had a lot of new business, but business that's
I suppose we've got Paddy's Day as well on Sunday, right? So I mean, both of you are working with bars in lots of different ways, T-shirt printing, you're working with all sorts of things with the bars as well. So you've got Paddy's Day, you've got Easter coming up straight away. Do you think there's an extension of holidays gone on here where people have gone, do you know what, it's Paddy's Day on the Sunday, you got Cheltenham Cup, then you've got Easter, I'm going to take a three-week break because the island is very, very busy.
It hasn't quietened. This year has not quietened down. You may have had maybe 1 week, which is like the centre week of where they do not take the kids out of school. But other than that, it's just been rammed, and obviously it's mental at the moment. And like you say, with Paddy's Day coming on Sunday, it's going to be mental.
Yeah.
Then it'll probably just, when I say drop off, it doesn't drop off to how it used to years ago. It'll just carry on. And I really think that May and June will just be just as busy, if not busier.
Well, it does seem as if that, I mean, even with the motorcycle rental business that we've got running, we are busy now through this is our quiet week. We get busy next week. We stay busy then all the way through to the end of April. And then we go into May where we always tail off. But we'll see, you know. I do think that, I don't know, people still seem to be throwing care to the wind and saying, you know what, I don't care. I'm going away. I'd rather be on holiday than work. And I'm just going
to. Well, remember, most of the. I went to fit a sign yesterday in Funchal.
Right.
And the guy said, like, it's a bar that changed its name, reopening under a new name. And it was opening on Monday, but I couldn't get there. So anyway, I went there yesterday to put this sign up at 3 o'clock. Well, I've never seen Funchal like that. There were literally people, there weren't room on the terraces in the bars for people to watch the racing. So they were standing outside the barriers on the pavement watching the racing.
Yeah.
It was on all the strip. It was insane. I've never seen it like that in all the years I've lived here.
But what about the traffic that we're having to get through? Do you know? I mean, this traffic is not just from tourists, right? Because there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about here as well. There's we've got this tourist go home thing going on, right? And I had a couple of people come over about 2 weeks ago, and we did a motorcycle tour. And they're lovely people, you know, typical Tenerife holidaymakers, right? And they said, oh, yeah, but they don't want us here, do they? And I said, what do you mean they don't want us here? And they said, they don't want us here. You know, you see it all on the signs now as you're coming from the airport. And I felt quite sorry that we're in this state where tourists, you know, are starting to think like that. Because let's face it, right, tourists built this place, right?
Yeah,
tourism absolutely built the island, right? Even you can even go back, right, to the early 1900s, right, where Puerto de la Cruz was actually one of the hottest destinations in the world, right, that you could go to. And there was like, it was said back then that this was the best climate in the world that you could ever come to. People would come on boats. It would take them months to get here on a boat, right? And they would come here, you know, rich and would come over and stay. So it's always been a hot destination for the rich, the wealthy, and now pretty much the middle class and everybody else who can get here, depending on what time of year. So what happens if we send them all home, right? And we tell them all to stop coming. And what happens if they find a new place? Yeah, and you know what? You keep going with your tourist go home campaign, and all these people decide to start going somewhere else, and boom, a new Canary Islands is born somewhere else in Greece or something like that, and suddenly we have nothing here anymore. I don't understand the mentality of it.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, it's always been like that since they've been. I mean, you know, you've seen this Giddies go home and Giddies go home and Godos go home stuff. I've been seeing that for years, and that's like non. It's not necessarily tourists, but it's non-Canarians that they, you know, so that, and I can remember, I'm sure Andy, you remember, there was a kind of Canarian separatist movement about 25 years ago. I actually had a guy come in and tried to sell me a magazine, and I didn't speak very good Spanish at the time, and I'm like, I don't speak Spanish, and he's like, this is not Spanish, this is Canarian. I was like, you know, come on, man. But it's this island is nothing without tourism.
I thought we learned that quite severely in the pandemic, you know, because like 4 years ago, all the tourists did go home. So did most of the Brits. So did most of the excess workers. And we was left on an island that everybody was sitting on their doorsteps with their heads in their hands, wondering what the are we going to do? And here we are with them now going, we want you all to go home because we can't get to our jobs and we can't get cheaper accommodation. And, well, look, you'll soon have all that back if they all go home, but you won't have any jobs and you won't have no need to have accommodation because you won't be able to afford it anyway.
You won't have any money.
Exactly. You won't have no money. Yeah. You won't have no income. I just said to my wife, we've just been out for a quick bite to eat, right? And we went to the restaurant, Asador Andy. Yeah, we've just been down Asador.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we've just been in contact with 27 individuals in that restaurant, all connected to tourism, right? In the restaurant, there was not one Canarian family in there eating. It was all tourists, right? We then walked outside, and as we walked outside, a girl comes past with a drum and a group of other young people who are off down to the town to do an act because they're involved in tourism, and off they're going from Lacamaya to go and do their act on the nighttime. Gets in the car, and as we've pulled round, there's a couple of lads I know from a band, and they're just on the way to a gig. They're involved in tourism. I've just been in Kamea for 2 hours, and I've just been connected to about 35 people who are all reliant on tourism for an income.
Yeah.
So brings you to why? So who's? It's not a majority. It's not even a big number, is it? It's a few handful of people that are disgruntled because they can't live in town, or they don't want to work. They want the handouts that they got given it COVID because they think they deserve it, and they don't want to work. That's the people that are doing these messages on there. It's not anybody that's connected at all to tourism. Not families from bar owners or restaurant owners. Of course, it's not, which is the vast majority of the people. You know, when I say vast majority, I'm one of that 99.9% of the people that live in the south of Tenerife. You're talking about a handful of people that are doing this, but like everything, it's getting the headlines. Cowdies should be on this. Yeah, and that's what's not good for the island. Nothing's like that.
No,
but that's politics, and that's the world, isn't it? Really, we're already going back to this sort of dead cat thing, aren't we? You know, somebody has a moan about something, and then the media or whatever get hold of it, and they'll promote it because it's contentious, and it makes people listen to their radio or look at their websites or, you know, start conversation about stuff that is absolutely pointless and doesn't matter.
Well, let's just go back to that a minute. What you just mentioned then, Andy, about people who are working and not working, and sticking within the business lounge. Let me just bring up a situation that I had this week. You know, took a person on, trained them up, found out that they weren't really suitable for the job because they didn't have the skill set that we needed. It was very amicable. Told them we'd have to let them go. And then got told that, the normal, threats and everything from an employee to an employer. So this is somebody I've given a job to, right, because they needed a job. Then I get threatened because I said, look, I've given you 3 months. You're not really up to the scratch for what I need. Things are changing, so I'm going to have to let you go. But thanks very much for your time anyway. Pay you everything that you need up to date. Oh, all of the hells in hell got let loose. I got told then that this person had been screenshotting my PCs every month, capturing information. Now, why I was told that, I have no idea, right? She, I've got to be careful how I word this, right? I was told that was done as a threat to me, right? And then I was told that they were going to do this and they were going to do that and they're going to take me to court and they're going to fight me all the way and they're going to throw everything they can at me. And this is a person, right, who I gave a job to, paid every day, paid their holidays, paid everything that they were owed. And because the business changes its direction, things change, as life does, and we pay them up today. When I was 15, 16 years old, I used to work on building sites. And I used to turn up at work sometimes, and the boss would say to you, very sorry, Adam, work's dried up, yeah, but we'll let you know if anything comes up. I didn't go and kick the wheelbarrow over, smash up the shovel, throw all the windows and the pebbles at the windows on the site and walk off tanting and ranting. I kept my composure knowing that one day that man might ring me up again and say, you know what, you're a good grafter, I want you back, I've had a new contract. Where's the mentality in these people?
Yeah, well, they haven't got it, have they? And this is the problem. And it's a growing, an infestation of how, and it's the manifest, I can't pronounce it at the moment, but it's changing and morphing into this, how the Spanish are, you know, but even the English are doing it now, you know, that the power lies in the employee instead of the employer. Yeah. I understand the old years ago that the employer could be a bit of a dictator, but come on.
I think there's to be a balance again. It's like everything,
isn't it? Balance is gone.
To be a right balance. And, you know, as well as I mean, when I worked in factories, I was employed by other people in various jobs over the years, various things I've done. You know, that you have to work hard to earn your own wage and to earn your boss something.
Yeah.
It's not altruistic. He's not saying, oh, come and have a job with us and we'll pay you 500 quid a week.
Yeah, I'm opening a business so I can employ people. No, I'm not.
No, exactly. But that's what they think.
Yeah, they think that you're more important to them as an individual than you are to them. Which is kind of about face. You have to understand that as an employee, you have to earn your own wage and you have to earn profit for your boss. It's as simple as that. And that's the deal, isn't it?
Well, it highlighted something to me, Steve. And this is something that I kick myself for it because I went through this, you know, numerous amount of times. I've been through this over the last, 10 years as I've employed different types of people. But keep saying, and it's something as business owners that we all should push, right? And that is references. Good old-fashioned references. If you have been working for somebody, right, where did you work last and can I have a reference off them? And as just because we're in Spain, just because we're in a different country, it should not be any different here. Because this will eradicate this type of person away from the employment market. Because let's say somebody comes to work for you and you say, right, have you got any references? Oh, no, I haven't got any references for the last 12 months. Why not? What have you been doing? Well, I've just been bumming about. Well, do I want to take a bum on then? Yeah, well, it's going to make you question it. Or they say, yes, I've got references. Fantastic guy I worked for the last time, run out of work, couldn't employ me no more. Shame it went like that, but here's a reference, and he's told me that you can call him anytime and he will give me a reference. That is what we're missing here. We're letting the employee win because we're not playing the game. Ask for references. Business owners out there, if you're listening, ask for references, because if they can't give you one, there is a big problem. Don't you agree, Ander?
Oh, I totally agree. I've had several people that's worked for me in the past that have one went to Australia, one went to America, one obviously lots went back to the UK, and they've always said, "Oh, can I use you as a reference?" Or they've messaged me and say, "Andy, can I use you as a reference?" And I say, "Of course." And I've had numerous phone calls from future employees and going, "Can you give a reference? How was he?" Obviously, they've got a standard format of what questions they ask. You know, and then some of them that I didn't want to leave that left, I just say, no, I've got to give you a bad reference. Really? Why? I said, because I want him to come back and work for me. So they always get the job when I say that.
Yeah, of course. But that's a good reference in effect, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think the skill set in Tenerife in Tenerife is small. You know, it's a small island. And a lot of people, before Brexit, Brits were coming and going. You didn't know who they were. It was very, it was difficult to get people. We always had to train people up in our industry. And I'm sure that's been the same for you, Andy, and for all of us, you know, for Adam as well. There's not a big skill pool here within the, let's say.
Yeah, but it doesn't start references because if you're a 35-year-old person, right, you've got to have worked somewhere in your life at the age of 35. Okay, you might be a woman who's been bringing up kids and you've been a housewife. Well, fair play. You know, that's understandable, and they've come along and now they're looking for work. Kids have grown up. They're at that age that she can start breaking away. Understandable. But if you're a grown person, right, man or woman, and you can't provide a good reference, then that should set the alarm bells ringing, because believe, you know, we're in the business lounge here. We're here to educate people here who are listening in, thinking about business in Tenerife or Spain. And the true thing here is, if they cannot provide a reference, it doesn't matter how good they look, right? Remember this. Wolf dress in sheep's clothing, right?
Yes.
And I agree. I think that
they will eat you alive.
The reference that you're looking for is really one about a person's...
Character would be nice.
A character reference. Yeah, character reference, right. Not necessarily about what work they know or have done in the past, although that obviously is part of it, but... It's about someone's character and about whether they're trustworthy or not.
I see where you're going with the skill set. Yeah, I mean, the skill set stuff, Steve, is kind of like you can't expect to get somebody come along who's got a perfect, let's say, with the T-shirt printing, is going to know 100% how to print T-shirts from start to finish. So you are kind of looking more for the character when you get somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's funny. I used to think to myself back in the day, do you remember when you used to go for interviews when you was a kid and you used to get asked, what do you like to do in your free time? And I always used to think, what's it got to do with you? You know, nothing to do with you while I do my free time. But obviously it's because as employers, you're looking to go, you know, what do I like to do with my free time? I like to go to rave clubs and drop loads of E's, you know. So, well, I'm not taking you on then. but that's what it was about.
We're all self-employed. That's why we're all self-employed.
But Andy's CV would obviously say, you know, I like to do tennis and I like to do a bit. And he'd be like, well, he sounds great, you know what I mean? Let's take him on, you know. But all right, let's move on. All right, let's move on and let's talk. Let's step into the lounge and the subjects that we've got on the table this week, right, which we are actually talking about. These new freedom laws, right, which we're seeing now spread across Europe, right? We've got a lot of new laws just appearing on the table. Some are going through parliaments, and we'll talk about how they seem to be getting them through. And how they are going to start affecting us. You know, how do we feel as business owners with these new laws, regulations constantly being pressed down on us? And the third question, what are we going to do about it? Because we all seem to be very passive. All right. So let's start with that first kind of part of that subject. I'm going to throw this into the middle of the room. The new laws of freedom, what have we seen? We've seen these new things going on in the UK. Do we feel that they're aimed at the Islamophobia, what they're trying to make out? Or are these laws and regulations just a wider way of being able to take more freedom and freedom of speech? Off you go, boys.
I think the new, what is really interesting is the new definition of terrorism. I think that's, you know, I think all these things are interconnected. I mean, when is a terrorist, when is somebody a terrorist? Is it when they're actually building bombs, or is it the things they say? Or do you stop it by stopping everybody to say anything at all so that you don't then have an interaction that is considered, you know, some sort of terrorism? You know, people are being, you know, battered in the street for being, you know, pro-Palestine, which is then viewed as being, you know, anti-Semitic. And the other side of that is being pro-Israel, and that's being perceived as being anti-Islam or Islamophobic. So all these definitions and all these curtailments on our freedoms of speech and are aimed at trying to pacify, I think they're aimed at trying to pacify those kind of opposing views.
Yeah, I mean,
on anything.
Let me throw something in the mix there to that, what you've just responded with. And how come if a Islamic person with his kind of ritual dress on, however, with the Quran under his arm, can walk in with a rifle somewhere, and that is terrorism, right? And in the same, let's talk about the States, for example, right? And he goes in and he shoots five people in a cafe or whatever. But when a young college kid goes off the head, gets an automatic rifle, walks into a school and starts gunning down children, that's a shooting, right? What's the difference?
Well, I believe there's a distinct difference because it's not political motivation. I mean,
Class,
but you say political, you say it's religious.
Terrorism is somebody who creates terror.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, I suppose what we're looking at is organized terrorism, you know, i.e. Hamas or Hezbollah or whatever, and they tend to be Islamic. But there are plenty of, you know, there's the far right in Germany that are, you know, not too well across Europe. They're not nice, particularly, are they? And they are on the edges of terrorism, really.
Domestic terrorism, isn't it? That's what they call it, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And Andy, like
the ADL. Andy, you love the States. You're over there quite often. You know, how's the feelings over there? You must have these kind of conversations with people.
Yeah, I do, but I don't have them as an in-depth as what we're having now. But I don't know. I don't know what they... I don't know. I don't know that type of conversation. It's more when I'm over there, it's all about politics. It's all about Trump and it's all about English politics rather than being around terrorism. I think it's a very, it's a hard subject to broach with anybody. I think everybody's a bit frightened and nervous about talking about terrorism because as soon as you mention it, you're all one way or the other.
You're Islamophobic
or you're far right and all that. So I tend not to get into that. I mean, I have to tread carefully because my wife just goes on and say, Andrew, please stop talking. Stop. You're going too much now on Trump.
I get that.
Trump and, you know, little debates with the Democrats and all that. I like to have a little wind up with the Democrats. But with that, I steer clear of it. So I wouldn't really know too much about it. But I would tell you one thing, though, and I know it's a little bit different, but it's all in the same pool, if you ask me. It's obviously, it's immigration comes with it. So they have got, and they talk a lot about immigration, especially because it's like Florida, I mainly go to. Yeah. So, you know, it's they understand.
It's an interesting conversation I had with somebody regarding, we touched on shootings and stuff like that. And we never get the statistics out of America about how many shootings were stopped or how many people were stopped because so many people carry guns and actually stopped people in their tracks before they were able to do anything. And I think I'd like to see those statistics about, you know, it's all right. We're talking about a country that's absolutely full of guns and people can carry in the right areas and blah, blah, blah. So how many possible crimes are stopped because of people carrying weapons and guns?
You know? They won't release that. The Democrats will never allow that to be released.
No.
Be an interesting statistic because I do think about it. I mean, we touched on this. Steve, you listened to that interview we did with Half-Face Blades and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, his business is absolutely booming over the last 4 yeah. years because, I mean, he puts it down to hunting. He's not openly going to say. I mean, he's got a lot of stuff going on. He's got stuff, you know, a lot of military stuff that he does now as well with the Marines. But, you know, lots and lots and lots of people are buying weapons. You know, is that a sign of the times?
Yeah. No, I think there's a definite fear in the world that something's going to go bloody crazy. You know, when I was a kid and I went traveling around Europe and, you know, just me and my sort of, I don't know, whatever you want to call us, hippie-fied buddies, we're like, yeah, we've got to change the world, man. You know, I mean, even before that with the likes of Woodstock and all that, you know, people have always, in the 20th century, I think, since mid-20th century, we've wanted change, but we're frightened of the way that change is going to come. And I think that's understandable because we, you know, I suppose in the early 20th century, we'd had 2 world wars. So I guess the fear of change is not so much the fear of change, but it's the process of how that change comes about, which is not, it's going to be violent if that kind of stuff happens.
Well, let's go back to Trump. Andy, you raised a question on Trump. Well, you brought Trump into the conversation. And I saw a headline, I think, yesterday or this morning, that Georgia, the state of Georgia, has just squashed the 3 criminal counts on him that he was in court for. They've been all thrown out of court again. He was also thrown out of court cases from the superior courts, I think last week, that they were trying to block him from being able to run for office because of Capitol Hill. That's all been thrown out as well. So everything that they've tried to hit Trump with all different sets of judges, right, has all been thrown out. Now, as much as we all want to say Trump is this, Trump is that, but it's obviously showing one thing, that everything that they've tried to do to this man has been absolute bologna, as the Americans would say.
Yeah,
but not everything. Not everything. I mean, you know, the thing about bribing the...
Hold on, Steve. I was asking Andy. We know what you'll have to say. Go on, Ant.
Sorry.
He's going to kick off with this in a minute. Go on, Ant. I mean,
well, no, because I'm going to be interested to see what he is going to say. But we'll come. But this is the same. And like I said earlier on, I said, don't like bullies. And this is the whole Democrat... all they're interested. I mean, what their campaign is just stop Trump, stop Trump. That's their campaign. You know what I mean? The manifest that they've got that they want to try and bring in is just horrendous. But you know, all they're trying to do is throw as much mud against the window and to see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And he said that. You know, listen. Don't get me wrong. He talks a lot of waffle. And I'm not saying he's the best person to try and run
the
USA.
Well, he's American, isn't he? I all do.
Yeah. At the end of the day, he's a businessman. I don't think he did too much of a bad job when he had the 4 years there. I'm 100% sure that he did better for, you know, his 4 years are better than the last 4 years. He's just, everywhere they've gone, he's just had to deal with a load of shit. And he just seems to carve his way through it. Obviously, he has the best of the best as his legal defense. But it's also flimsy. I mean, I don't care if you just asked any typical lawyer, not even the top lawyers in the UK, they would have gone, financially, we can't go do that. The CPS in the UK, they just go, they wouldn't touch any of those charges, not one. I don't know all the charges.
It's just all hearsay, isn't it? You know, most of it's just hearsay charges against him, hearsay financials.
But you've got to have some meat on the bone to spend the money.
Well, it was interesting.
Who's okaying all this? That people that okay it, that do it, like that one, the one like you said in Georgia.
Yeah.
That she's up against it now with bits and pieces, and she only got into office because she says I'm going to bring in Trump, so she had to do it, and everybody knew it was just going to fall flat on its face.
Yeah. Well, I watched an interview the other day when he was on one of these kind of television debate programs, and the interviewer says to him, "You haven't paid your tax on this." Blah, 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 for the last, you know, so many millions. And he went, yep, that's right. And he said, that's because of Article 947 or something. You know, don't quote me on that. And that's because you don't have to pay your tax if you use that loophole in the tax system. And that's why I haven't paid the tax. He said, and it's the same reason why all of your donors haven't paid the taxes, because you have that loophole there for them to use.
Exactly.
And if you don't want the loophole there, why don't you take the loophole away? And then I won't use it. But you won't take it away because you'll lose all your donors.
Exactly. Stones in glass houses.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it was just a brilliant, and like we've had this conversation, Steve, about Trump, and I'm going to let you in, you know, next. But this is what I was saying before, and I was saying this to Amber when I was on the Washington show last week, is that, yes, the first time I saw Trump, it was very, you know, bombastic about his approach to politics, and he was very inexperienced. But I think the man has learned a hell of a lot over the last 8 years, right?
Yeah.
And I think he's got a definite change in his persona. He's still bombastic and he's still outspoken, but they love that in America, you know? You go and buy a burger from Burger King in America and that's even bombastic, you know? But this is a man who has learned a hell of a lot, and he is a very, very good businessman, and he's a very shrewd businessman who's been able to make a lot of money from the different loopholes and stuff that's been there. Steve.
Well, you know, I accept what you say about him, so I'm sure he's learned a lot. I'm not sure what he's learned is going to be good for America or the world if he does get in. I mean, and I agree with you, his first 4 years, you know, weren't bad 4 years for the world. He didn't really do anything. He repealed a few laws that Obama had put in. And he did a few things, but he was a quiet president, really, even though he was noisy on Twitter, and he said a lot of ridiculous things, and he still does. I mean, you must have seen the quote about wind and windmill.
Well, hang on, Steve. Hang on a minute. I understand what you're trying to say, but pacifying North Korea, pacifying all the ones that we've been drummed into us for the last 8 years previous, that how dangerous North Korea is and all that. And the guy goes straight there and goes and shakes his hand on the border. Yeah. I mean, and actually acknowledges that there's an issue with the immigration through the South, and then starts building a wall to try and combat it. He's the only one that's actually ever done anything. So I'm sorry, but I can't accept what you're saying, that he was a quiet president. I'm not having it.
Well, he did that with Kim Jong-un, or whatever his name is. And I accept that. And it never came to anything. It was a piece of theatre, in my view. There's no real benefit to anybody. Probably there was no benefit to anybody on that, except probably Kim Jong-un gave him a bit of credibility. I don't think it did anything for the States. And all it did was, like, maybe something. I'm not saying that Trump is going to be the end of the world. You know, a lot of people are very, very frightened of that possibility. I'm not particularly, because I think he's in it for himself. That's where I start. I don't think he's there.
Okay, can I ask you, one minute. Do you think he's a corrupt president?
Yes.
Oh, you really? And you don't think Biden's a corrupt president?
You didn't ask me that question.
No, well, I'm going to ask you. Do you think Biden's? Who out of the two?
I don't know.
You don't know Biden's a corrupt president, but you know Trump is one.
I'd say Trump is more overtly corrupt He doesn't care if people know. I mean, they found piles of bloody secret documents in his bathroom at Mar-a-Lago.
He's allowed to have them.
Yeah,
well,
he is.
That's a bone of contention.
No, he's allowed to have them. He's the president. He's allowed to have them.
Lads,
that's all been dropped.
We could go on to them, yeah. You know, Biden's yes, son laptop, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The thing is, there's always the president, right? Let's be honest, right? You're running America, right? You've got umpteen documents being sent to you probably every 5 seconds of the day, and everyone's saying you need to read this one and you need to sign this. And to me, I don't think Trump's the sort of person who just starts signing papers, right? He's got too much in his life and he's built too much wealth in his life to be a man who just signs anything that's shoved in front of him, right? He's learned too many lessons about that. So he's probably gone, I tell you what, I'm going to take them papers home. I'll need to go through a few of them before I sign them. I need to have a read, right? So I'm the president of the world, let's face it, right? That's what the job is, right? I'm the president of the world. I've got 15,000 papers to read. I'll tell you what, Giles, stick a couple of them in the boot of the car, put them in the shower at my house. When I get back on, I'll try and get through them while I'm on the poop house.
While you're on the John.
Yeah, while I'm on the John, I'll have a read, right? And so they've gone around and they've found some papers that are left over from his presidency. We don't even know if the FBI planted them, right? Because he is very good.
I think he quite.
But didn't they go round to Biden's house not so long ago and find loads of paperwork at his house as well? Because it's in the top job, Steve. How many T-shirts you got knocking about in your gaff? Because you've had
none,
to take a few home and do this or do that.
None, mate.
And you must have stuff at your house. It's an irrelevant.
I've got a garage full of it.
Bull. It's irrelevant. Bull. It's distraction. Right.
Yes,
let's get
exactly
back on to what we're on the lounge, right? Because distraction politics is something I see being used massively at the moment. We're all busy in our businesses. We're all trying to make it work. We're trying to pay off our COVID loans and we're trying to get our monies back in and recuperate still. Because remember, as business owners, we still had to pay out all of this money for manoeuvring people about, making ERTE and furloughs and making all this work. And no one's ever compensated us for that time or given us any grants or anything like that. So whilst all this has been going on over the last 4 years, how's all of this distraction politics affecting us in business? Because we're seeing a big shift in people. We're seeing people who are changing their ways all the time. How do we act as businesses when we're constantly seeing and having this shift in people and people's attitudes? And something that really stands out, and we can sit here tonight and all, you know, we can debate different things, but the general census across lots of people is they all feel the same way and nobody has any trust whatsoever for politicians. Where does that leave us all? Steve?
Well, you know, they say you get the government you deserve, and I think maybe that's it. You know, I know plenty of people that don't engage in politics and they just like let it all wash over them and deal with the consequences of that. I don't think you should have if you don't get involved in it, then, you know, you deserve what you get. But I think ultimately that's the problem. And then we as people are just trying to run a business and trying to get through our week without too many distractions, just get on with our work. Have been told that by governments and by various departments within government, taxes, you've got to do this. You know, I mean, just the paperwork in Spain is absolutely ridiculous, and we all know this. And the paperwork from, you know, registering your businesses, opening license, what is that all about? Absolutely rubbish. It's just a tax on somebody trying to start a business. It's absolutely ludicrous. You know, and these sort of laws and these sort of draconian, I think a lot of them are, Andy probably knows this better than me, but I do think a lot of them are kind of left over from Franco's era. You know, they are getting rid of them as slowly and changing slowly. But the problem is, you know, it's like when you change, it's like, you know, you need to do it overnight. You know, it's like, I remember, oh, I don't know, 50 years ago, Sweden decided that they were going to start driving on the other side of the road. And so one night in the morning, on one day you were driving on the left, and the next day you were driving on the right. Literally overnight, they did that.
But let's go back to something you just said, Steve, about sitting on hands, because that's the passive conversations that we keep having with lots of different people. Andy, are you finding this kind of same rhetoric with people that you're talking, everybody's saying the same things, but it's a very passive approach that we're getting off people?
I do. I agree that everybody that I speak to seem to have the same views of me. You know, they don't trust any of the governments. And these are the Spanish and the English that I know. But again, what can we do? I know years ago, everybody would be demonstrating the streets. I think the last major thing was the poll tax in the UK that actually changed anything or did anything. But that was only changed for a different type of tax.
It was interesting to see a news snippet on the news. I think it was on Sky News today, and it was about this freedom of speech. Michael Gove was on the television on Sky, and he was talking and dictating about how all these laws now are going to be the best thing that they could do for England. This is a minister, of course, that was involved in the COVID inquiry. He was involved in the Sue Gray report, all of which have been pushed under the table. And if we dig deep enough, we'll remember this guy, right, was married to the Cheeky Girls. Remember, right? This is a minister.
Oh,
he was married
to the Cheeky Girls. Yeah.
He used to slap their asses on the video, right? He's probably been on Epstein Island for all we know, right? It will have been for political reasons. It'll have been to get some paperwork stamped up, of course. But, right, he is definitely in the mix, right? And now he's dictating these freedom of speech laws. And someone said to me this morning, look at all them people on London Bridge, you know, look at all those Islamic people marching across. And I think they all stopped, and they all stopped in London Bridge and went on their knees and started praying. And there was nothing that anyone could do. But I tell you something now, right? They all went out and did something about what they believe in. Right.
Yeah.
And we're all having these conversations about what we believe is right, what we believe is wrong. But no one's having a conversation about what we do and what we believe in and what should be done. And this seems this is the sort of rhetoric that we're going on. It's getting boring conversations because
we don't know
everybody just wants to go back to, you know, hiding under their business stone or hiding away and hoping it's all going to go away. It's like we're a race of ostriches and we've all got sandbanks around us.
I agree totally.
But you remember before Brexit, when there was a massive anti-Brexit demonstration in the UK, I think there were 3 million people on the street. Nothing happened.
No.
Nothing happened. Brexit.
Well, they've
happened,
got us tied down so well, haven't they? Right? Because
looking at that,
the parliaments have got this divide and rule approach now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It's divide and rule, right? We've gone one step further than the Roman Empire. We have now gone to divide and rule, and they've spent the last 25, 30 years dividing us, and they've done that very well with social media. They've divided all of our children from families by gender bending, let's say. Yeah, gender bending, I call it. Right, so they're bending the genders. They've managed to shove these devices in front of us that we now are all doom-scrolling on, and we're all completely divided. Even when we go out to dinner, we can be sat at dinner tables and everybody's not even speaking to each other. So they've managed to divide very well, and now they're moving to the rule, because that's what's happening. Rules and regulations. Driving licenses being changed by Brussels, which is 2,400 miles away, right? And they're changing the rules on driving licenses for us now. And we will have to hand our driving licenses in. We will get driving licenses back. That will be for 5 years only. And we will have to take new tests and medical exams every 5 years to keep being reinstated. And any of your, if you've got public driving or HGV, anything like that, you will lose completely. You will have to do a retest every 5 years. So all of this is being done in Brussels, right, where nobody has voted for anything, no manifesto.
What's the point of that, though? What's the point of it?
Well, it's that they're going to use the emissions, aren't they, right? They need to cut down the amount of drivers on the road, so they're going to start making it harder for you to drive. They're talking about handing rules, where if you've got a vintage car or you've got a vintage motorcycle, then once it becomes the end of life, which they class as end of life, you need to hand that into the government and they will dispose of it for you, right? What is going on, Where are we heading? Here we are. You know, we've got. Yeah. I don't know. I'm at the same place. Yeah, I don't know what to do. But
well, like
we
I say,
can't
when
just
we
keep
did,
sitting on our hands.
When we tried to do something, you know, all right, like Andy said, you know, the poll tax, take that one. You know, millions of people out on the street, not, you know, crying about the poll tax, can't pay it. They said, all right, we'll stop that. And then they bring in council tax.
Council
so it's the
tax.
Same bloody deal. It's the same thing. And so even, you know, as a millions of people complaining on social media, on the TV, on radio, on the streets, demonstrating nothing actually changes.
I think the thing is you've got to be
voted in the wrong people. I guess.
And you can't. This isn't a call for violence. You can't have violence. It doesn't change anything. Protests don't just seem to change anything. But there is power in numbers, you know, and I think there's got to be some way where people can start to join forces together that can force things to be overturned, that can force things to be re-looked at in Parliament because, you know, 3 million people have signed this petition. And I've seen these things online. They tried to do this with Brexit. There's like this, like a government thing that if you get over 100,000 people sign on to this, then it will be re-brought up in Parliament and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Maybe we need debated. Calls for, you know, maybe there should be calls for stuff like this again, especially from the EU. There was a headline out there saying that the EU were very worried about the elections this year because of the non-transparency and the amount of false news that's out there. Well, give us some clarity then. Where do we go?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but false news is, it's false. How do we know?
Well, exactly. I mean, there's no website. You know. Is there by the EU saying we're about to discuss this
but
in the EU
if there
Parliament?
Was,
and, you know, let's
if
have
there
some
was, would
up.
You trust it? If there was, would you trust it? If
well,
there was
I
a
think,
website, that's
well,
if
it was a government website, you know that it's true, don't you? You know that if you've got a government website online, you know that it's a true website. You know, you can tell that. You can tell by the domain names and stuff like that that's used. And the government stuff that then is posted.
Government tells you?
Well, we don't believe that. But we need some sort of clarity. That's what I'm saying. We need some clarity on stuff.
It's a very difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing. There are websites where you can sort of verify truth of statements that are made or truth of political sort of actions and so on, things like that. But, you know, you can't. We live busy lives. We can't spend all of our lives going, oh, is that real? Is that real? Can we speak to you? Is that real?
And isn't that orchestrated? Yeah.
Well,
that's orchestrated by the governments, isn't it? That we are so busy having to try and keep our heads above water and paddle underneath like ducks, you know. We're all swimming about on the lake, all looking nice and calm, and underneath our feet going like this, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's how I feel.
Trying to
keep afloat. I think we all feel like that, Andy. I think we all feel like that. I think that is the situation. And we've crossed this bridge a few times over the weeks. You know, me as a liberal, if you like, and a bit of a lefty, and you guys perhaps more the other way a little bit, you know, we all actually agree on the problem, and we all, none of us really know how to solve it.
I think the only light I saw over the last couple of weeks, and this is probably going to be a controversial one to throw in because I don't actually like the guy myself, but in I think it was Grimsby, the Labour government in the UK thought they were going to walk in the park with Grimsby, and suddenly George Galloway comes along, who's been sort of off the charts for a few years, right? He said, no, he's not. But he took the seat from the Labour, right?
And it wasn't Labour, though, just to verify that. It wasn't Labour because that was where the Labour candidate had been dissed. They'd chucked him, basically said, we're not backing him anymore because he was anti-Semitic or... I can't remember what he said.
Yeah, he said a few different. He said a few outspoken things.
He was an idiot. So he blew it his own.
Yeah, but everybody who doesn't agree with you, Steve, is an idiot. That's why you've been sailing us all week. You know,
all week.
If you don't agree with someone or you don't like them, they're an idiot, and you shouldn't listen to them. You know,
shot. Should all be shot, no question.
Right, lads, listen, we're coming up to the end of the show. Thank you very much. We've had a good chinwag about a few different subjects there. Why is it all kind of, why is it all related to business? Well, it is. And as a business owner, if you're listening as a business owner, you need to be in touch with these subjects because at any moment, these things can change and affect your business. And any of these rules that come in, let's take the license rule, for example. If you're employing drivers, suddenly you could be less drivers than what you thought you would have. So these things are why we discuss them in the business lounge and bring them to the table so that everybody can hear about them. What do we do about them? I just don't know. Last word, Steve.
Well, last word. Help. That's my last word, really. There's nothing to say. I mean, you know, we're in such a confusing situation that we, you know, we don't know who to trust. We can only trust our own instincts, I suppose, and try to get through as best we can. You know, but if people change the laws from under us and require us to do stuff that we haven't got the wherewithal and means to do, then I don't know what we do. I don't know.
Andy?
So help.
Yes, well, I'm glad I'm at a stage in my life where I've got a couple of deals to do and then I'm out. I'm just glad. I wouldn't want to be early in 20s and have my own business and having to do it. I just had a little meeting this week with a friend of mine and he had a big restaurant business here and a big land on it, which he sold off and rents off. And I said, oh, are you doing any bit? He goes, no. He goes, too many taxes. I don't want to. He says, I get the rent from here. I get the rent from the garage and I get the rent from the car wash. He went, that does me fine. And I thought, that's exactly what I'm trying to do now.
Yep.
I don't want any staff. I don't want any. I just want to get the rents in. I think, but that's what's happening in the world is pushing everybody to that.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think a lot of business people are very tired, are very weary, and are thinking the same things. There's a lot of people I've known have been in business for a very long time. A lot of people moving to Dubai. A lot of people getting out of the game, and a lot of people getting rid of staff. Because for every staff member you've got, you have a noose around your neck at the moment. Gentlemen, we will leave it there.
Okay.
All right. I will see you all again very soon. Hopefully we'll see you in the in the lounge next week. We do have a guest. I already have a guest speaker for next week, so I'll be inviting him in. I will let you know in the week. We'll try and get Henry in as well. We'll try and get a few more in for debating. It would be good to have a bit more of a wrestling match in there. And we'll see how we get on. But
more people to bite chunks out of me.
as always, it's been a pleasure. You take care, guys, and thanks very much.
Take care.
Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Ride Time Radio.